Howdy, everybody, and thanks for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and joining me as always is Mr. Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I'm super excited. The UFC fights last night were amazing.
They were great. This is the second time I had to cut this intro because my mustache got too big, got hung up on the microphone. Kyle's been laughing at me the whole time. We had to recut some stuff, but we're doing better now. Yeah, we're doing better now.
Yeah, here's a new secret, folks. We don't do this all in one run. Like, lots of times people are like, how do you do your segue so perfect? And they don't realize that we make mistakes a lot. We just edit that part out.
More than a lot.
You gotta, there's a lot of starting and stopping.
Ridiculous on this, yeah.
So if you're a podcaster out there and you're trying to figure out how to do an hour-long show with no mistakes, it's impossible.
Right. Yeah, it's way too much.
We got an interesting show for you today, Cam. You've got some UFO things lined up.
Kyle hasn't heard it, so I just kind of give him a little teaser, so he's going to find out about it, you know, when everybody else does. But yeah, I'm going to be talking about a little human mutilation goes along with the UFO stories.
Awesome. Well, did you see this in the news? UFO hunters claim that another huge alien mothership is draining the sun of energy.
What?
And NASA is not acknowledging this. That's right. Now, it says UFO hunters bizarrely claim that they found this new spacecraft. The U.S. Space Agency last week released footage of a massive solar flare. And somebody looked at this image and they noted that there was a giant flying saucer, which they claim is a giant UFO, and it's been sucking energy out of the sun. Now, this was published on YouTube by somebody named StreetCap1, and they put on there that this object has structure, and for NASA to dismiss it is nothing but an insult to people's intelligence. Take a look at this, Cam. Do you see that thing?
What is that?
I mean, I don't know. They're claiming that it's a giant mothership. Now, they say that this UFO is awesome. Every time I try to ask NASA about these UFOs on Twitter, they ignore me. They have never answered and refuse to talk about these giant UFOs near our sun. These crafts sometimes are even the size of the moon. This one looks like it's about the size of the state of Idaho. Yet NASA doesn't care. Now, you know, I'm looking at the picture, and it is an odd picture. I have no idea what it is, but I don't know how you can look at that picture and go, oh, look, that one's the size of Idaho. Man, how do you know that?
I don't know. I have no idea.
And then he talks about he's tweeting NASA, and they're refusing to answer him. Why would they answer somebody over Twitter?
Well, first of all, if it's not that, I mean, you got to look like a crazy person tweeting NASA, like, look what I found.
But exactly. That's what I'm saying. If you really want to claim that NASA's not answering you, did you draft up a formal letter and write them on your inquiry? Maybe they would respond, not Twitter.
That's true. Very true.
No, yeah. Like, I'm looking at these pictures, and I do see what they're talking about, and I don't know what it is. But there's all types of other things I see in the image, and no one's even talking about those. So, is this a giant mothership draining energy from the sun? I mean, it seems like a pretty outlandish claim to me. Now, they say in here in the article that, you know, the sun, we know it's going to die one day, but it's probably not going to be for billions of years. But if these darn UFOs don't quit draining the energy, that the sun's probably going to only last a million years.
I would hate to have that job. So that just makes it feel like that would just be a bad job.
What job? Draining the sun?
How hot would that be in that thing? Is that the equivalent of like having to haul hay? Is that what that is? What are you doing? Well, I got to get up in the morning. I got to go drain part of the sun a little bit.
Well, they said that the energy from these solar you know, these mass coronal ejections is amazing. I mean, it says it releases energy up to 6 times 1,025 joules of energy.
I have no idea what you just said.
Right?
You could have made up some words.
I'm pretty sure this article is made up.
Is it like 1.21 gigawatts?
1.21 gigawatts.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah, you could have told me anything at this point.
Well, they're talking about the massive amount of energy that these solar flares have, and that's what this UFO is trying to obtain, I guess.
I guess this
is like a interstellar gas station, and you got to pull up next to these suns every once in a while, fuel your ship, and continue to move on. I don't know. It seems pretty crazy to me that it does go along with the UFO topic that we're going to be talking about today. What did you find over there?
Well, I got you a thing off of Cryptozoology News. And like we said, folks, I don't know if it's legit or not. This is a heck of a story, though. I will give you this. There's a minister and a daughter believe they saw a pterosaur in California. Now, this, of course, instantly when I saw it, I'm like, yes, Jurassic World. Now, that's what it is. It says that they claim that this creature was straight out of Jurassic Park. Now, the minister is a 50-year-old Texas resident, an avid bird watcher, said that they were at Stones Lake National Wildlife Refuge, just south of Sacramento, when the creature showed up. It says, we were hiking and looking for blue herons and other migratory birds, the woman told Cryptozoology News on Thursday. Now, my daughter and I saw the bird first, and we both pointed to it, stunned and in shock, as we tried to come up with a logical explanation for what we thought we were seeing. It was not a kite. It was a real animal. Now, this alleged encounter occurred back in 1994. Now, I like how these dates, you know, go way, way back, over 20 years ago. So nobody said anything. But says the eyewitness observed that the animal for about 20 minutes had circled that whole area that they were in, then veered off in a different direction. And she explains that even though it makes her nervous to have to admit it, the bird was very pterodactyl in shape. She says that that is the only point of reference I have for it. I remember I said, that's impossible. They are an extinct species. And my daughter, who was well-read on extinct birds, kept pointing out the unusual features of this animal. Now, the daughter described the creature as having a featherless, long, thin tail and a pterodactyl-like head. Its wings, she explained, were not shaped like a bird's wings. It had a long neck, long head, and a pointed beak area, and a very large wingspan, bigger than that of a blue heron. And it was gliding very high up with very little flapping movement of the wings.
That's crazy.
Now, they both said they were a little bit freaked out, and I can completely understand why. Could you imagine seeing that?
I would love to see a pterodactyl or pterosaur.
A pterosaur, yeah, something along those. Exactly.
Now, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't like to see that?
Look, I understand, like I said, look, it sounds crazy. And it's easy to scuff off. Let's take this as being real. Let's take this as this isn't a made-up story. Let's say that this woman is not telling a story that she just dreamed of something having back in 94, that this actually happened the way she claims it. If she's a bird watcher, avid bird watcher, and knows what she's looking at, she would know what she was seeing.
That's exactly right.
If you was really, and you look at that, you're like, man, I would know what the heck that is. And they're looking for blue heron. They already know it's a large, and then they say this big leathery-like creature flying around, which always still makes me wonder because they just released something just the other day showing a fossilized bird from way back in the day, and it was, you could see feathers in the outline of the bird.
Right.
So I guess to me, I'm always like this. Is what we believe is the giant pterosaur, did it really have feathers, but we've all believed that it was leathery because that's what we were taught, and that's what everybody's seeing, so they're making it up, or did we, in fact, create that?
I know what you're saying,
You know what I mean?
Because it seems to me like more than likely that pterodactyls had feathers.
Had feathers.
But people don't see that when they spot them. They see what you think of a pterodactyl.
Exactly.
Because of cartoons and television.
Because you were told to think that.
That's exactly right. So what is that? Are people creating these stories? They're fabricating these stories? Or has the collective energy of the universe, Tulpa-like, created this pterodactyl that's leathery?
It almost seems that way.
Right? I mean, John Keel writes about a lot of these sightings of the Mothman and things like that. And he talks about creatures much like Ken Gerhard, who actually has a new show that's coming out.
Yeah, it's Missing in Alaska. It was a good show.
Yeah, really?
I
didn't get a chance to see it. I recorded it. I'll probably watch it today.
It's good.
But, you know, there's in those stories, his book, Encounters with Flying Humanoids, there's descriptions of things that have, like, bat-like wings.
Even on the cover of his book, right? There's a bat-like humanoid.
It reminds me of, what's that movie, Jeepers Creepers.
Yes.
The boys love that, by the way.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, let's take a break, and when we get back, Cam's going to get into some of these bizarre mutilations. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. In the dark that hides from you.
All right, guys. Now, as I said, of course, before the break, I've not told Kyle hardly anything about this. And there's a reason behind it, really. There's a reason to my madness on today's episode. I want to get his actual opinion about it. I want to get a full feel, like not even give him a teaser, really nothing about it. And this is a very disturbing thing. I've been sitting on this information literally for a year. When I found this about a year ago since I mentioned it to you just a little bit, and then I did some stuff, and I've pretty much been sitting on it until now because it's kind of hard to take. It's really one of those things. It's a very disturbing thing. So I'm going to go ahead and get into that right now. We've all heard of cattle mutilation. We had Christopher O'Brien on, Stalking the Herd. We've all heard of this. And for those of you that have been hiding under a rock, or for anybody, just a refresher, it's also known as bovine excision. And basically, this is what they give you online. It says, is the killing and mutilation of cattle under unusual, usually bloodless and anomalous circumstances? Now, they go on to say that worldwide, sheep, horses, goats, pigs, rabbits, cats, dogs, deer, and elk have been reported mutilated with similar bloodless excisions. Often an ear, eyeball, jaw flesh, tongue, genitals, and rectum are removed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really no big shocker. We've all kind of heard of that and the whole thing. This hits a little closer to home because today I'm going to be covering human mutilations thought to be caused by UFOs.
Yeah, now I've heard about this briefly, and that's what's so terrifying, is this is not something that only happens to animals. But it does actually happen to human beings as well.
Yeah.
These incredible, these surgeries, these makeshift surgeries or whatever that is that's going on that they find in these corpses, the looks like laser cutting, things like that, bloodless, like you're saying, very strange. It's not just like somebody was murdered.
No.
You know?
No, it does. And what's even wilder is I found some stories that they have some pretty reliable witnesses that go along with it. And that's going to be this first story that we're going to discuss. One of the earliest reports of human mutilations perpetrated by what was believed to be aliens is actually a case that was witnessed by Air Force personnel, and it's the case in which a U.S. Air Force sergeant by the name of Jonathan P. LeVay was seen being taken captive aboard what the witness claims appeared to be a UFO at the White Sands Missile Test Range in New Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
No, they saw it.
They saw this happen.
Well, not to cut you off or derail you, but I have my uncle was a fighter pilot in World War II, and he was actually in Los Alamos at one time, long time ago, he told me. He's an old man. I mean, he's in his 90s
now. I know exactly which one you're talking about.
And he told me about UFO activity. He said, they would see it.
Wow.
They would say they would be testing rockets and things, and you would see these orbs come and follow them around. He's like, I saw it with my eyes. He's like, everybody on the base knew about them. I was like, what?
That's
what are you talking about?
Right?
He told me, no, he's like straight up. And I'm like, he's not messing with me. Why would an old man just make that up?
Yeah, out of the blue. He's never told you before. Just recently, he's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen that.
Like it's a matter of fact. Yeah. So you're talking about the same area.
Yes, exactly.
I'm saying that I have another source that corroborates that story, that there was things that were seen.
Well, it's around that time. The abduction took place in March of 1956. Couldn't find the exact date, but everything says March of 56, about 3:00 local time, and it was witnessed by a Major William Cunningham of the United States Air Force Missile Command near Holloman Air Force Base. Okay?
Okay.
Now, it says Major Cunningham and Sergeant LeVay were actually out in the field downrange from a launch site looking for debris from a missile test site when Sergeant LeVay went under the ridge of a small sand dune and was out of sight for a time. Major Cunningham heard Sergeant LeVay scream in what was described as a terror or what he felt was agony.
Whoa.
Now, the major, thinking LeVay had been bitten by a snake or something, ran over the crest of the dune and saw Sergeant LeVay being dragged into what appeared to him and was described as being a silvery, disc-like object, which hovered in the air approximately 15 to 20 feet off the ground.
Ooh.
Now, of course, Cunningham described what appeared to be a long snake-like object, which was wrapped around the sergeant's legs and was dragging him towards the craft. Major Cunningham admittedly, now he says he froze when he saw this.
I'll bet.
Said the sergeant was dragged inside the disc, and then he observed that the disc went up and took off into the sky real fast as he just stood there just just petrified pretty much. Now, Cunningham ran, of course, jumped in the Jeep, got on the radio, reported the incident to the missile control, whereupon missile control confirmed there was a radar sighting of something in that area. Now, search parties went out into the desert, and they were looking for Sergeant LeVay. Major Cunningham's report was taken, and he was admitted to the White Sands Base dispensary for observation. So I'm sure he was in shock. I'm sure that it was overwhelming. Yeah. You know, he lost his mind and he froze. This is a man trained for combat, trained, you know, to be involved. And he froze at this point. Just what do you do?
Yeah, I could imagine. I mean, what would you do if me and you were hiking and I disappeared over the ridge and you heard me yell? I mean, that's my mind is the same as his. I would think, oh, crap, Kyle just sprained his ankle. Yeah. Or you got bit by a snake. Or,
yeah, hold on, bro. Here I come.
What the heck? And then you come over the hill and you see a disc like that and a long snake-like thing dragging me into the craft.
Yeah.
I mean, I could imagine you would be frozen in fear. I mean, what the heck do you do?
Well, there's so much goes through your mind. Yeah, I can imagine the shock, everything of what you're trying to wrap your head around, and what you're actually seeing.
Right. And then when you drive back in your Jeep back to the base, I mean, like, how do you tell your superior officers what you just saw without them, you know, locking you in the infirmary for being insane or something, right?
Or worse, where you get charged with the possible murder.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is what we're fixing to get into.
Oh, okay.
They searched for Sergeant LeVay for 3 days. And finally, at the end of the third day, his naked body was found approximately 10 miles now, downrange from where he was. Now, the body had been mutilated. The tongue had been removed from the lower portion of the jaw. An incision had been made just under the tip of the chin and extended all the way back to the esophagus and the larynx. He had been emasculated.
Mm.
And his eyes had been removed. Also, the report says his anus had been removed. And there were comments in the report on the apparent surgical skill of the removal of these items, including the genitalia.
Right, so it wasn't just some marauding murderers that were butchering somebody.
No,
it wasn't a satanic cult, you know, sacrificing LeVay to their worship ceremony and stuff. I mean, it was done by somebody who knew what they were doing, well-trained surgical precision, almost zero amounts of blood.
That's exactly right.
So how do you explain that?
It gets the report. Listen, the report actually commented that the anus and genitalia had been removed, and it says, as though a plug, which in the case of the anus, extended all the way to the colon. There was no sign of blood within the system. The initial autopsy report confirmed that the system had been completely drained of blood and that there was no vascular collapse due to death by bleeding. The subcomment was added to this report, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was unusual because in anybody who dies of bleeding or in the case of complete blood loss, there's always vascular collapse, but there was none in this.
Oh, wow.
None. It was also noted that when the body was found, there were a number of dead predatory-type birds within the area who had apparently died after trying to eat on the corpse.
Really? That's a bizarre.
There was also a number, they say, of extremely grisly photographs, and from all indications, that the body had been exposed to the elements for at least a day or two. Now, the New Mexican sun, they say, of course, is extremely hot. And, you know, that could have caused some of the stuff, too. But Major Cunningham was accused of murdering Jonathan P. LeVay. But charges, of course, later were dropped because they couldn't.
Yeah.
They couldn't go along with anything like that. Now, so they said he was dead a day or so.
Mm-hmm.
But he was missing for three.
Right.
So that brings up the point. Was he killed right then, right whenever they
gathered him up?
Gathered him up. Okay. Let's start off this. Is the major a liar? Did the major, you know, because we don't know what kind of relationship he had with the sergeant. Maybe there was something going on. Maybe one of them slept with the other one's wife. Maybe one of them owed the other one money. We don't know what's going on. But either way, when you kill somebody, like I've killed people, but when you're talking, when you've killed somebody, you that's kind of above and beyond to take their tongue, take their eyes, emasculate them, take their anus, core them out, like cut the core, basically.
Yeah.
You're taking this out of them. You're draining them of blood in a way that most everybody suffers from vascular collapse, but this person did not.
Well, and it seems like a medical procedure because, you know, if you watch a lot of these crime shows, I'm talking about like the realistic ones, the true life crime, like Dateline or 2020, you watch. Most of the times when they find somebody like murdered by rage, you'll see them stabbed like 42 times or something because they're, you know what I'm saying? they're furious with the other person. Usually they're lovers or something like that.
Exactly.
You can tell a lot by the way someone... Why would you murder somebody in this bizarre, like, medical procedure type way? To me, that is really bizarre. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
What would make you... If I hated you to the point where I wanted to kill you, why would I go, well, I'm going to make it look like it was a medical procedure?
Yeah.
That's really weird.
That's going above and beyond.
And that's assuming that Cunningham has the ability to perform surgery with such precision, right?
Well, where's all this blood, too, is the first thing I want to know.
Yeah.
Where'd all the
and
blood
go? And I'm sure
go?
His timeline, I mean, because they found him, what, 15 miles away?
10 miles away.
He would have to kill him, and then he would have to have time to move the body out there, and then also go back to the base right after it supposedly happened and report, you know, that his partner was gone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean...
Well, and like I said, he was dead apparently a day or so. So did the death occur instantly right after they took him? Is that when, you know, was he dead on the ship and then they brought him back and dropped? Because that's just when they found him. He may have only been there 10 minutes. He may have been there the whole time. I mean, we don't, you know, that's what makes it so strange.
I wonder if he had shoes on when they found him.
I don't think he had on anything. Now, there's more. Like I said, there's more. Now, of course, that right there was from Don Ecker. He had done some work on all this, and he's... No, really, really in depth in a lot of this stuff. And this comes from an article that was Don wrote that appeared in the July and August UFO magazine issue from 1989. And it was entitled Apparent FBI Stonewall and the Report of Human Mutilations. And in there, he asked a question. And it's after briefly discussing these two cattle mutilations. And this is what he says. It says, but what if the human equation is entered? Have any cases surfaced that would suggest at any point that human beings have been given victim to such grisly assaults? The answer is yes. And this brings a frightening new facet to the UFO phenomenon. And in that same speech on that thing, Ecker goes on to report that over 3,000 missing children reports have surfaced in a single New York County.
Ooh.
Now,
Montauk Chronicles?
Exactly. That goes back into it. Now, further, get a load of this. Now, in Idaho in 1979, the mutilated and nude body of a young man was found in a wilderness area, mutilated in the same fashion, basically, that's what we've come to know as cattle mutilations. His genitals had been surgically removed, his lips had been taken off, and an ear was missing. There was also a noticeable lack of blood. And here you go, Kyle, you're asking about the shoes. When found, this victim's feet were bare, clean, and unmarked, and he was wearing only his underwear. His possessions were later found several miles away.
Right. So the reason I brought up the shoe thing is if you're familiar with David Politis and his work in Missing 411, which we'll get to later in the show, a lot of these missing people cases, they're found without their shoes
exactly.
on. Exactly. And or they're found with the articles of their clothing discarded miles before they find them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so in the first story with that Mr. LaVey and Cunningham, they found him 10 miles away. He disappeared. I was wondering if they found him without shoes. But this guy, you're saying that they did.
Yeah.
No shoes on. And that's another thing that
feet were clean.
David always brings up is if somebody was to hike barefooted for 10 miles, well, your feet would be all cut up.
Yeah.
But they're usually not found that way.
No, they're found pretty much clean.
So what is that?
It gets even
What's
wilder.
Abducting these people?
Yeah.
And for what purpose?
And taking whatever they want off of them.
Right.
Yeah. Now, there are incidences that come from South America, Central America, Vietnam, Mexico, even Europe. Now, Ecker goes on to say that he's got a friend in law enforcement that attempted to use the National Crime Information Center there, the computer, to verify these reports since 1970. And he's saying that it had no such reports for these states. And he was then warned off, this friend of his, apparently by supervisors. Now, there were several other law enforcement friends tried the same thing with, they say, the same result. And one of Ecker's friends actually told him that someone is setting on something big as hell, is what he said, that they have this information, which goes back into what we discussed. You and I've talked about off air for hours on end about this missing 411 stuff. It almost seems like it ties into some of this.
Because I don't think they want people to know that this is a possibility when you're out and about.
Exactly.
Because no one's going to want to go outside if these, you know, UFOs will just swoop in, grab you, and cut your lips off, cut your ears off.
Well, and there's nothing you can do about it.
No,
there's nothing anybody can do about it.
No.
I mean, not just you. I mean, there's nothing anybody can. Now, the editorial section of the British UFO magazine Flying Saucer Review, written by Gordon Crichton in the December quarter of 1990, and is actually volume 35. There is the issue contained the comment, and this is what the comment says, all right, from Mr. Crichton. It says, "We admit that we do possess seemingly unaccessible material about terrible atrocities committed against human beings in China by aliens. Materials communicated to us privately and personally by a millionaire industrialist who frequently has reason to make business visits to China and knows the country well. All this, we repeat, may well be true. Alas, even if it's true, I am not going to publish it. Let somebody else do that if they want to." And goes on to say, "One may ask why. The only reply can be that there are surely still other aspects of which we must not lose sight. There seems to be overwhelming evidence of many more than just one species of alien. If so, then surely there must be more than one possible policy or attitude toward us. The outlook may seem dismal at present, but how foolish it would be to assume that we see the entire picture."
Wow.
Which is a little bit unnerving.
Disturbing. Yeah,
yes.
Right?
A little unnerving, yeah. Now, here's an interesting little tidbit, too, I'm going to throw at you. And this actually comes from the Inner Sanctum from UFO Crash and Retrievals Report in 91. Mr. Leonard H. Stringfield. Now, he's a veteran Ohio UFO researcher, and he specializes in crash and retrieval studies. And he reports on a human mutilation case in his sixth status report. And he goes on to say that a high-ranking Army officer, Mr. Stringfield, has known for several years, wrote to him that in April of 72, members of a U.S. Army Special Ops group that were operating in Cambodia became involved in a firefight with the occupants of what they say were an alien craft.
Really? I've never heard of this.
Now, the result of this action was several alien casualties and a human death. In addition, several other humans were inflicted with burn injuries from an unknown type weapon.
Laser.
Exactly. Now, the horrific part, they say, of this story is that the group came upon the aliens as they were sorting human body parts into large bins and sealing them. And after the firefight, the aliens packed as much as they could and loaded the bins onto the craft. The craft then lifted off quickly and disappeared from sight. Now, according to Mr. Stringfield, his Army source, he can no longer contact. Of course, now that says lending some credibility to the conclusion that either the story is true or it has been released for disinformation purposes. That maybe it's not true. And when we start talking about these crazy, there's another case that I could get into right now about the Adamski case, about a fella that was found. But I'm going to save that for a different show because that's a whole nother can of worms in itself. But this next story that we're going to talk about is probably, if I was going to have to hang a number on it, it's probably one of the most famous and also the most questioned stories ever of human mutilation, if you talk about this, if you're into this kind of stuff. Now, G. Cope Shellhorn actually has written and done all these studies, and he actually wrote a UFO-related homicide in Brazil. It's called The Complete Story, and it comes from the International UFO Magazine. I'm going to read you some excerpts out of this before we get into it. Now, the first says, if, this is Mr. Shellhorn says, if this case is authentically UFO related, and at this time I have no reason to believe it is not, then all of us are going to have to reevaluate to one degree or another our tentative conclusions as to the possible specific intentions, moral perspectives, and general agenda that some of our extraterrestrial visitors may have. Now that goes back to the last quote that we talked about is, man, we don't really know. There's multiple species. We don't really know what each one of them. I mean, they may be friendly. One species might. The other species ain't so friendly after
all. Exactly. That's what they always talk about that.
Goes on to say, what is more disturbing is that Brazilian ufologists and police have estimated that there may be at least a dozen or more cases similar to the recently uncovered Guaporanga Reservoir case. If this is true, it is somewhat doubtful that any of this potentially new material will ever see the light of day, given the official attitudes now prevailing in Western power circles. But we can gratefully disclose that the Guaporanga case and its accompanying photographs will see the light of day. Now, obviously, if the Gaparanga data is legitimate, then it becomes increasingly difficult to maintain the position that all visitors are demonstrating a relatively friendly attitude towards humans, regardless of what their specific agendas may be. Now, I'm telling you all this. This is a buildup. I'm building you up for this Gaparanga case, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right. This thing is as long as a well rope. So, and he goes on to say that the Gaparanga situation indicates that there's at least one group of alien visitors to the planet who have a complete disdain for human sensibilities, who, in fact, could care less about the value of human life. And I hate it when they say that because I would think it would say who couldn't care less. If you could care less, that means you have a little bit of compassion. But yeah, it should be who couldn't care less,
right,
about human life. Now, I'm hopefully some of y'all are aware of this case. Like I said, I've sat on it for a while, but it's out there. It's floating around. If you do any looking into it, it's just something that a lot of people don't talk about because I guess it's so easily written off as it could be a murder. It could be a murder. And I agree. I mean, all of these could be murders. I mean, people that go missing all the time could be murders. But this is still a very, very strange case. And like I said, there's folks, if you want to, you can go online, you can search it up, you can see the photos of this case. I'm going to be going and talking about the case a little bit more, and I'm going to talk about the autopsy photos too that were taken. I would say use discretion because it is a very disturbing thing.
Yeah.
These photos, are you checking them out? These photos are disturbing.
That's what I'm looking at, right?
Yeah, it's not for everybody. You know, this isn't for everybody. So
I guess I just want to know what it is. What's going on?
That doesn't look like a murder.
No.
Exactly.
It looks like a bizarre medical procedure that's been carried out on these people, unwillingly, obviously.
Yes. I'm going to read you all the specifics about this case, and here we go. Now, there is an E. Garcia, this woman, and she learned from her friend, Dr. Ruben Goes, that he was in possession of some rather odd photos, which had been given to him, he says, by his cousin, a police technician, Rubens Sergio. Now, these were official photos of a body that had been found near Gaparinga Reservoir on the 29th of September in 1988. Now, these photos showed what was an unknown and unnamed male who was later identified, but this whole time, of course, they withheld the name from all the media and investigators and at the request of his relatives. So nobody's come up with the name, which is, I can see why you wouldn't probably want that, but also, too, it would be nice so you could go and talk to the family. I would like to know now what the family thought happened, because I guess it's one of those things you would like to know if there was foul play involved, if there could have been foul play involved before you take the leap of it was an alien craft or an alien species that did this. But anyhow, after studying the photos, Ms. Garcia was impressed with how similar the wounds of the body were to those found on the carcasses of many of the UFO-related mutilated animals. Now, knowledge which the original investigating police officers and medical doctors involved with the case did not possess, so they had no idea about this cattle mutilation when these people found this body. Now, surprisingly, Dr. Soensa was the head of the primary investigation, offered his files on the case, and they go on to say that this is the stroke of luck which they needed and could be all very thankful for. Now, these included the all-important autopsy descriptions of the photographs. Now, the initial police report, however, was not extraordinary, they say, in nature, except for the recognition that the body, although extremely mutilated, had not met with unusual violence. And when I say that, it goes on and then they discuss that there were no signs of struggle and no signs of any application of bondage of any kind. So there was no handcuffs, no tape, no rope, no bindings, no zip ties. We're talking about nothing and no sign of a struggle. So that's even stranger. You know, what do they call them? You know, the marks, ligament mark. What do they call it? You know, when they tie them up, they always leave some sort of marks. NCIS or CSI.
Yeah.
Anyway, and it was the autopsy report itself, they say, which was the most revealing, especially when you compare the remarks that were made with what was later learned about the animal mutilation cases. Now, they say in this thing, it goes on to say, and this is Mr. Shellhorn says, it is imperative to remember, as I have stated previously, that the individuals conducting the autopsy had no knowledge of similar animal mutilation cases. So when they go in and talk about this, they didn't know about this. So they're just giving their opinions of what they're seeing. Okay.
Right. Okay.
So this is a real, I guess you could say, a real revealing part, a real retrospective part of what you're going to look at and what they're going to talk about. Now, Ms. Garcia received copies of 7 photos, and those are the ones that you're going to see online. Now, the work of these perpetrators made these cuts, precision cuts, basically, the removal of whole internal organs through small holes. There was a lack of bleeding, the failure of the body to smell or decompose rapidly, which is all hallmarks of animal mutilation.
Right.
You know, that's the same thing. Now, the peculiarities would seem to rule out, of course, Satanists and, like they said, revenge seekers, you know, just casual mutilators or anything. And I mean, even this goes beyond what they would say would be like a modern Jack the Ripper in these tales. Now, photo number 1 shows the face and upper torso. Now, the body was in perfect condition. Rigor mortis had not set in, and it was estimated that the victim had been killed approximately 48 to 72 hours previous. There were no signs of animal predation or putrefaction, which might be expected. Now, strangely, there was no odor to the cadaver. Bleeding from the wounds had been minimal. The black coloration found in the face area and in other places within the photo is partially due to low light exposure and when the photos and others were taken. And it's also partly due to coagulated blood in the wounded areas. As can be clearly seen, flesh and lips have been excised around the mandibles, as is common in cattle and other animal mutilations. The autopsy report noted that the eyes and ears were also removed and the mouth cavity was emptied. Removal of these body parts, including the tongue, is here and is common, like we know with that. Now, this is a quote from the autopsy report. There has been a removal of extensive tissue along many parts of the face, head, and neck of the victim. There has also been extraction of ocular tissue, eyes, auditive internal and external organs, ears, and entire parts of the head. The tongue and several muscles were also extracted. Now, that's pretty strange right there. In a safe, and Ms. Garcia recognized that in comparison of a victim, of course, with animal mutilation cases made, that says you can see they are the same. And that is also the conclusion of these doctors. Now, the doctors drew their conclusions only after they had been shown photographs of similar animal mutilation cases. So even after they did all this, they did all these autopsies, when they finally got these photos, they brought them and said, look at these animal mutilation cases. And the doctors are like, wow, that is almost spot
they
on.
Can't explain
exactly.
It.
Now, photo number 2 of the face and upper torso with the arms outstretched is perhaps best to begin with this autopsy quote. It says the auxiliary regions on both sides showed soft spots where organs had been removed. Incisions were made on the face, internal thorax, abdomen, legs, arms, and chest. The doctor stated that these wounds were quite uncommon. It also goes on to say shoulders and arms have perforations of 1 to 1.5 inches in diameter where tissue and muscles were extracted. The edges of perforations were uniform, and so was their size. The chest had shrunk, I get a load of this, due to removal of internal organs.
Really?
So, basically, they pulled them out. They cut some holes up in there, pulled them out. Now, the police and the medical examiners were convinced the holes found in the head, arms, and stomachs, anus, and legs were not produced by bullet wounds. Okay. So they checked them out for that first and foremost. Now, in photo 3 is a close-up of the left side of the victim's head. And this is where it gets a little strange. Of course, the ear is missing. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Auditive internal and external matter was removed. Now, the photo does not show small holes that were discovered in the skull. They were detected, however, later by the medical examiners, and it was not stated if brain material had been removed and how much. But basically, not only did they take off the outside of the ear, they took off what was down inside the ear canal.
Wow.
Now, on photo 4 is a close-up of the lower torso, including the thighs. And the report says that you've also found the removal of the belly button, leaving 1.5-inch hole in the abdomen, and a depressed abdominal cavity showing the removal of the intestines. A great amount of internal organs were extracted. The edge of the hole was perfect and shows a precision cut. Also, the abdominal area of the body was very shrunken because of organ removal. The original autopsy report notes that the scrotum was also removed by a 1.5 centimeter incision.
Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, they go on to say this, that most revenge seekers, when they castrate a corpse, they take it all.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They take your twig and berries. They go with the whole, all the wedding tackle's gone. This was just a scrotum. The penis was still there.
That's all they wanted.
That's all they wanted was the scrotum, the actual reproductive part, which is strange. Now, photo five, of course, goes on to show that the victim's lying on its stomach, and there was the removal of the anus and second and third toes. And it goes to talk about the same as a plug being removed, just like in the other victim from the U.S. Air Force. So it's almost exactly the same way. Now, Schilhorn concludes with this here. He says, what is most compelling about the anal incision and the extraction of the anal and digestive tract tissue is that it is a carbon copy of the surgery we have seen in so many UFO-related animal mutilation cases. If we discard the possibility of the Garapinga case as a piece of misinformation, we are left with several intriguing alternatives. Is this the infrequent act of a rogue extraterrestrial group which from time to time enjoys indulging themselves in a pathological blood sport at the expense of humans? Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
More likely, he says, I think we are indirect witness to an intentional, contemptuous act by a group or species of extraterrestrial origin who would like to give other visiting species a bad name and, as a bonus, harness mankind into a greater fear mentality that already binds us. But these are only speculations, and we will have to wait until a future time for greater truth when more thorough revelations and evidence that supports them become available.
Wow.
So, he's posing that question. Is this an extraterrestrial group,
right,
that's doing it to cause problems for other extraterrestrial groups? Or is this really a rogue group? Or is this just a whole nother species? Or is this simply a murder? Just simply something that's gone bad and people just can't explain it. Now, MUFONOhio.com, there is a great article on there called The Unspeakables, and it's Human Mutilations and Missing Children. And it's written by Irina Scott and William E. Jones. And as Kyle brought up, I would suggest checking out the article if you're interested in this subject. And of course, it not only makes you connect the dots to some of the strange missing children cases, like we talked about in the Montauk reports, but I believe it has some relevance to the missing 411 cases. But like I said, you need to read that. If you're into 411, check that stuff out, themufonohio.com. But Phil Schneider had a very interesting quote. And it was about a reaction to the reputed darker side of ufology. And he wrote the following about missing children in a Harper's Magazine article. And this is Phil Snyder's quote. It says, the public concern for the mythical missing child involves, I think, a powerful need on the part of adults, a need for the innocence between good and evil. The defenseless child abducted by a dark stranger is the perfect metaphor for violated innocence. Exchange an alien for the dark stranger, and the metaphor perhaps becomes even more perfect. We humans seem to have an emotional need to see much in life as a battle between good and evil, where the choices available to us are clear. The coming human-alien battle that some ufologists foresee truly fills this need.
Hmm.
Now, what do you think about that?
Well, some people say that he was a madman,
mm-hmm,
and that all his stories were crazy. And, of course, this is the ramblings again of a madman. But, you know, that's what they always say about people that are later vindicated, and it comes that they're actually right.
Yes.
Is there a coming war between human beings and aliens? And, like you were talking about earlier, is it a rogue group of aliens that's not like the other ones? Or have we somehow, knowing that they're doing this, the government, say, of the world, leaders have made some kind of backroom deal with them and says, look, you're going to give us some information about technology. And in exchange for that, we're going to allow you to abduct people at your disclosure, your choice, and you can do these bizarre medical experiments. My only thing, though, when it comes to this whole thing, though, that seems the most confusing to me, is, like, why do they even bring the bodies back? Like, what's the point? Wouldn't they just, mm-hmm, take them, do their experiments, and then dispose them there in space or wherever? Why do they always bring them back, you know?
Yeah.
But they don't look like murders. It reminds me of a story, and we've talked about it before on the show, of a man named Todd Sees. You remember him?
Yes, I do remember that.
Very bizarre, similar situation where he went missing. They found his body like up in a tree or something, yes. And it looked like he had been murdered and worked on, dissected, and then dropped down. And, you know, there's been numerous researchers that have tried to work with the local police there, and it's like nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to help them. So what's going on? I mean, it's very, very bizarre.
Well,
it reminds me a lot of that.
And you brought up a point that I always find it's intriguing when people use that point. And it's funny to me. Like they said, they make a deal. How would you make a deal?
I have no idea.
Well, no, what I'm saying is you've got nothing to combat it with. If they told you we're not going to make the deal and we're still going to take who we want to, how are you going to stop it?
Well, I believe that they could be very advanced, but maybe not so advanced that we can't fight them. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I would like to believe that. I would like to believe that, but I don't know. Because I don't know how to feel about this.
You've seen them. They're very frail looking.
Well, the ones that you see a picture of, you look like you could whoop its ass, but I don't know that you could.
Well, they always seem to stun you.
Yeah. I don't know.
What about the insectoids?
Well, I guess I want to feel, you know, just like everybody else. I want to feel that we are in control of our lives. We're in control of what's going on. And we have people in the common good looking out for it and all that. But what if there's a lot of what ifs, I know. But what if there are different species? I mean, we've discussed it. We've discussed all kinds of different species on this show.
Mantis beings.
There's some that could not be, I mean, that could not be friendly, could be trying to ruin it for the others. But like, you're the teacher's pet. I'm going to make y'all look bad. I'm going to start abducting people and dropping bodies because we want them to be found.
Which
we
one do you think people. Is the most evil? The Nordics, the mantis beings, the insectoids, the reptilians, the grays, the little troll looking hobgoblins.
I'm going to have to say the grays because that's the stories that you always get.
You think the grays are sinister?
That's the story that you always get, is that the grays are sinister.
I'm not so sure that the grays...
Are they just working for another group?
Exactly, or even biological. Like they might be like androids or something that are doing the
maybe
work.
Maybe it's the Nordics are actually the most evil. I don't know. Look, of course, this is all a wild bunch of speculation. But, I mean, really and truly, what is this? If folks, and that's what I want you to think about. These cases are here. They're few and far between, granted, yes. I mean, they are few and far between of these human mutilation cases. But there are some cases out there.
Absolutely.
And it's worth to take a look at, and it's worth to think about. Because we know that there's hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands, of people alleging to be alien abducted. So
contactees.
Exactly. Yeah. And then they're brought back, and they're told these things. We don't know. I mean, people... I hate the fact that they point fingers at these people that are contactees and go, that person's crazy, you didn't really have any. I don't know what you had. I wasn't there that night. Maybe it did happen.
Well, regardless of aliens or human beings, the fact remains that these people were murdered.
These
people
exactly.
had families. I mean, these are tragic events.
Yes.
This actually has happened. Regardless of who's to blame, it definitely happened.
And like you said, why bring the bodies back? And then why not put them right back where you got them?
Yeah, they're just always found nearby where they disappeared. I mean, why would
I'm going to drop them 10 miles, why wouldn't I just drop them out in the ocean and forget about them?
Exactly. So what is that?
I don't know. It adds even more to the madness that is.
Maybe they're just
story.
Not very smart. Maybe they're not up on our forensic technology that we have.
Yeah, right? Maybe not. I don't know. So, like I said, folks, this is one of those ones that I've been sitting on for a while. And if you have any input, go ahead and email the show. Tell us what you think about it. It's
interesting.
It's very interesting, and if it was too much for you guys, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that it was a little graphic, but it's one of those things, like I said, if y'all want to check the pictures out, go check the pictures out. I would suggest not. I'm not one of those guys that wants to watch that kind of stuff on Facebook or YouTube or any of those videos online, and I don't like those pictures.
Yeah.
So I saw them, I'm like, I'm good. I don't want to see them again.
Yeah, I'm with you. Well, stick with us, folks. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. Hope everybody enjoyed those gruesome tales that Camel was talking about with the human mutilations. Like I had mentioned, if you're interested in this thing, search up Todd Sees. That's S-E-E-S. Very bizarre case. Very interesting case. I'm not sure what happened, but either way, he was killed. And seems under mysterious circumstances. Getting on with, I had mentioned it earlier in the show, about David Politis and the missing 411. Unless you don't know... David Politis is a researcher and I think former law enforcement and, 30-year investigator in his field. And he was told by a National Parks ranger one time that David needed to look into all these missing people in several different national parks, that there's numerous amounts of people. I think 1,400 people so far have been noted to be missing in the national park system, and nobody knows what happened to them. And they find the body sometimes, mysterious circumstances surrounding it. Very interesting. I'm talking from 2-year-olds up to 80-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they find them alive, sometimes they don't. And we're talking about impossible things. Like they'll find a 2-year-old that's traversed many rivers, cliffs, mountains, and it'll be found 15 miles away in literally like 2 days. And just you scratch your head and you're like, how is it possible?
And we're not talking when Chuck Norris was 2-year-old. I mean,
that's
we're
right.
talking like a real 2-year-old.
That's right. Anyways, the books are awesome. I suggest everybody pick them up. They're Missing 411. Like we've said before, do not go to Amazon or anything like that or eBay.
Yeah, buy them straight from him.
Buy them from him. It's canammissing.com. You can find those. We got the most recent one, The Devil's in the Detail, and I've already been reading about halfway through that thing, and once again, he knocks it out of the park. There's crazy stories in there. But the reason I bring that up is they're trying to film a movie, and it's going to be called Missing 411, the movie. Him and two other gentlemen, they've already filmed about a third of the movie, he says, and they've started a Kickstarter fund to pay for them to mm-hmm. finish the filming. So if you would like to support David Politis and his work, you can go to his Kickstarter. And there's several different donations you can make, as little as $5 and on up to $10,000 and everything in between. And of course, you know, if you donate, you know, it's $50, you'll get a DVD and a hard copy and a T-shirt and things like that. I think if you donate $250, your name will actually be in the credits.
Yeah, I think
showing
so.
That then. But let's listen to this little trailer.
One of the hardest things I had to live through was knowing when Jared disappeared. I was part of that circle that he could count on. And I wasn't there for him.
The fact that hundreds and hundreds of people have gone in to national parks and forests, tried to enjoy our public lands, and disappeared or were killed, it's something that the public needs to know about.
This is too much now. This is too much to be coincidence. We're talking about cold, hard evidence.
You're funny,
Dad. I know.
Jared was wearing some blue sweatpants. He had his shoes on, and he had like a beige colored jacket. And what they actually said to me was, he's okay, we just can't find him.
There was a point where he looked up at me, and I took a picture of him, and we told each other, see you in a little bit. And that was the last I saw him. I kept watching for him to arrive at Spruce Treehouse, and he never did.
Typically, people who go missing are found within hours or maybe a couple of days. As the days clicked on, the chances of finding him alive at that point were starting to slip away.
It's been 2 years since I haven't seen my dad.
We send out a rescue, but I'm really not supposed to answer any of these kind of questions, though.
Whistleblower Act protects you, right? Nope, not in this case. I used to have a lot of great faith in National Park Service. I loved those. I thought that was, I'm a park ranger.
It's their job to protect people in national parks and forests, and you're telling me that people go in there and disappear and they don't even keep a list of it? That's a lie.
We're talking about a very large collective of stories that nobody's talking about.
He called me and said, they're not telling you everything. One of these days, I hope you find out the truth.
Just find me a bone. Just find me something for actual proof.
I think I made a mistake just by answering what I did.
Okay, so, see, I mean, I love it. It's very fascinating. What happened to these people? And I do want to see the movie get made. I mean, he's got about 20 days to go, and he's already raised nearly 3/4 of the amount of money. So I think he's going to hit his goal.
I sure hope so, because I want to see it. And when that trailer is the one that's what pushed me over the edge. This may be, and you and I have discussed this about lots of things, but I'm not so sure that this may not be my all-time favorite subject.
Because it's bizarre. What is going on? Is it UFOs, like we just talked about? Is it Sasquatch? Is it a mass murderer? I don't know.
And is it the Fae?
could be the Fae folk. He brings that up actually in the beginning of The Devil's in the Detail.
Man.
Why are these national parks not keeping up with the missing people? I mean, literally, they say that they don't have the budget to do so. But like David brings up in all of his books, you need a clipboard, a piece of paper is all you need to do. You need to write down who's missing, the day they went missing, where they went missing, and some, you know, a few facts about the case. That's all you need.
Because that would be acknowledging that they were looking into what's going on.
You're exactly
right.
That's
why.
Most of these national parks make a ton of money. I think he showed in one of his books that the Great Smoky Mountain National Park makes like $8 million a year off tourism. Well, if they know that people are getting abducted,
and there's nothing they can do about it,
there's nothing they can do about it, no one's going to go to those parks.
Exactly.
So is it really money? Or they can't be at fault if they don't acknowledge it. But it's disturbing how many people go missing.
Yes.
He even brings it up when you go hiking with your family. Don't let anybody stagger behind. Fall behind.
Yeah.
Don't let them get out too far in front of you either. Everybody needs to stay close. I never used to think about these things, but I tell you now, when I go camping with the family, there's not a time, literally a time that goes by that I don't revert back to those books and be like, man, that's weird.
It's one of those things, folks, if
don't
you enjoy
go
camping,
berries.
Yeah, if you enjoy camping and enjoying doing stuff with your family, you might not want to read them because it may ruin your trips from now on.
Well, and if you're not an elite member, on the last show of Expanded Perspectives Elite, we actually did a bunch of stories about camping.
Yes, some creepy camping stories, yeah. Oh, and we're going to try to get David on. We're working it right now, and I think he's going to end up coming on here pretty quick. So we'll be chatting it up with David and discussing some more of his new stuff.
Right. Well, let's listen to one of these stories from the last week's Elite show about camping. This first one is called The White Mountains Creature. In late October 1995, Tango, his family, including the dog, were searching for a suitable camping spot in the White Mountains of Arizona. The sun was already beginning to disappear behind the mountains, and they hadn't found a spot yet. They were all growing tired, and the dirt road they were traveling on was becoming narrower and darker. As the trees closed in around their car, Tango's dad, who was at the wheel, realized they weren't going to find a good spot on this road and decided to turn around. His dad stopped the car and began to make a three-point turn to go back in the other direction. It was then they saw something quite unexpected. As we turned our car halfway around, we saw a little girl. She was in tattered clothes, and she looked up at us. Her eyes grew wide in fear, like she had seen a ghost. My dad rolled down the window and asked, "Are you all right?" The little girl trembled and said, "You shouldn't be here. Please, go back." Tango's dad was confused. Did this girl need help? What was she trying to tell them? The little girl just repeated the same phrase. Tango's mom was scared and finally said, "Let's go back." Tango's dad finished turning the car around and headed off in the other direction. About 30 minutes later, they finally found a camping spot. Oddly, no one seemed to feel tired anymore. They unloaded the car, set up the tents, and built a warm campfire. As they sat around the fire, they couldn't help trying to sort out their experience with the strange girl. Suddenly, Tango's dad said, "Shh." His mom chuckled because he was always making jokes, but he was serious. His face went white, and it was clear that they were all struck with the feeling that they were being watched. I looked around the forest, my heart pumping fast. I didn't hear anything, but I was scared. A spine-chilling roar came from the woods. What was it? Tango was on the verge of screaming in terror. The bushes rustled, and something bolted out of the forest and into the light of the fire. It had sharp teeth and no fur. It was the size of a bear, but its eyes were yellow. I was frozen in fear. It stood for 10 seconds in the light, then galloped off into the forest. I was horrified. My dog was whimpering, and it curled its tail between its legs. This was the most horrifying experience in my life. This creature was extremely skinny. It looked like flesh and bones. The disturbing image of this thing is implanted in my head forever. There you go. Expanded Perspectives Elite. There's a ton more shows. If you're only listening to these free ones, you're missing out on half of the fun.
That's right. We've got now over 50.
Over 50 episodes over there. They come out every Thursday. And if you join up, it's easy. It's $5 a month or $55 for the whole year. And I suggest you sign up now, because in the next couple months, we're going to be taking down a lot of those. And you're going to have to buy them, you know, by season.
Yeah, we got to do something.
But you can still get on right now. $5. You can download every episode of Expanded Perspectives Elite that we've ever done. Like you said, about 50, 51 of those now. Signing up's easy. Just go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Go to the top right. You'll see the Elite tag right there. Plug it in. It's easy. You can use PayPal, debit card, whatever. It's pretty easy to do. Oh, also, yeah. If you have any stories of your own, any interesting stories you'd like to share with the show, please email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can follow the show on YouTube. You can follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
Call us. You can call us, folks, 817-945-3828. Now, again, that's 817-945-3828. And if you feel froggy, we're making that push to 200 ratings before we hit the two-year mark. And we are real close. So jump on iTunes and give us a rating, please. Get us up. We're trying to get it up there, at least anywhere, any country of the world. We're trying to hit 200 in America, but everybody else is, y'all are jumping on board too, so you people are awesome. So thank you very, very much.
Right, just before we let you go, I'd like to bring up again my hats off to Mr. T.J. Dillashaw for finishing Hennepin Brow for the second time.
Ooh,
what a brutal fight, right? Oh,
he put on another clinic. Man, that dude is unbelievable. He never ceases to amaze. T.J. is constantly getting better. My hat's off to that fella. And you know what? Burrell's had a great run. Seems to be a good guy. He's an amazing warrior. Maybe it's time he looks for something else. It's only going to get harder from here on out.
He needs a better cornerman. No one can compare to Dwayne Bang Ludwig.
That is the truth, right? His cornermen. His cornermen are a joke for sure.
Everybody have a good week. Don't work too hard this week. Drink plenty of water. Go to bed early one night. Get you some sleep.
That's right, for sure, folks.
Take your vitamins.
The Flintstones chewables, folks. If you liked these creepy stories that I did today, Thursday show is going to have some more. I think I'm going to do the Adamski case and a few other things like that on the Thursday show. So if you enjoyed that and want a little bit more, jump on over here on Elite. I'm going to do that again coming up. So
for all you elitists, we'll speak to you on Thursday. For everybody else, we'll talk to you on Monday. Be good.
Peace.